Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz Today.
Years ago, if you had asked me about red flag laws, I would have said, yeah, I'm down with that. The fundamental idea of a red flag law is you have a family member, you know somebody who's in some level of distress, some level of mental upheaval. You can invoke these laws so they can't hurt themselves, they can't hurt another with a firearm. And there are families that have seen family members and they don't know how to help. They don't know how to intervene. There is no methodology. And they've talked about red flag laws as a way of maybe doing so. So I was down for that because I thought that was a common sense, practical application. We're talking about how to have people have the maximum amount of rights while still being able to, in the moments necessary, to be able to say, whoa, let's help this person. And then I saw how states and others were abusing red flag laws to take away gun rights. And I said, okay, we're out. I will always side on the side of the Second Amendment. These people are abusers. Well, the red flag law thing has now become a thing as the DOJ is now launching a center, they call it, a national center to help states implement red flag gun laws. Guy Relford joins me right now from the law offices of Guy Relford, focusing on the Second Amendment and gun laws in the state of Indiana, but you hear him on TV and radio all across the country talking about firearms and the Second Amendment. This story came out of News Nation. 21 states have these kinds of red flag laws, extreme risk protection order laws, as sometimes they are called. Talk to me about, let's start from a baseline, the origins of red flag laws and your take on them.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony, and thanks for having me on. Indiana was actually the second state in the country to have a so-called red flag law, and so we go way back. This was passed by our legislature almost unanimously in 2005, and the origin here in Indiana is very specific. There was a very beloved then Indianapolis police officer, for IMPD, named Jake Laird, who was murdered by a guy who was walking out down the street firing off an SKS rifle after he had murdered his mother, a guy with a long history of mental illness, who had had guns taken from him in the past, but the police had no way of keeping them because he hadn't actually been arrested or convicted of a crime. And so they kept having to give him his guns back. And he was one of these guys that he was okay when he took his medication and he was very, very off when he did not. And so he quit taking his medication. He had a complete breakdown. He's a paranoid schizophrenic. He murders his mother. He's walking around this near southeast side of Indianapolis firing off his rifle. Police respond, and Jake Laird, in a shootout, was shot and killed. Other officers also heroically acted and ended up killing this guy. But the legislature looked at that and said, well, hold on. What's the legal mechanism that could have allowed police to keep this guy's gun? I believe his name was Kenneth Anderson. And they said, well, we don't have one. And so that's when the bill was put together and in 2005 was passed. So that was the goal. And really, much like your opening comments, I get it in terms of what the goal is. I mean, those of us who say, wow, you know, the police in Parkland and the FBI didn't do anything when they had all these reports of this guy down there, you know, being violent and the police going to his home dozens of times. I mean, why did anybody do anything? Well, he hadn't been convicted of a crime. So if you're talking about doing something, you may have to have some legal mechanism to do something, including taking his guns. Well, that's where there may be a legitimate role for red flag laws. But much to your point, I mean, I'm sure I've litigated more red flag cases than any lawyer in Indiana, and I've taken the statute to the Court of Appeals a couple of times. And the abuse, Tony, is just rampant.
That's what I want to get into. I'm going to ask you to toe up a little bit, hold up a little bit, talking to Guy Relford, a law offices of Relford Law, R-E-L-F-O-R-D, relfordlaw.com. When we see a red flag law, we're not just talking about saying, oh, this person has to lose their gun for a while. Is this about somebody being adjudicated mentally unfit, meaning you talk about a mechanism, by a court? Or is this something that the police can just say, we're going to invoke these red flag laws and you lose your guns for 72 hours?
Well, no, it's much more draconian than that. There is a mechanism. I mean, people can go through an involuntary commitment proceeding where they're adjudicated to be a danger to themselves or others, and they thereby become a prohibited possessor under federal law. But that's totally separate from a red flag law. You're dealing here with someone who's not committed any crime. That's where the abuse comes in. Someone who's not committed any crime at all, and at the same time has not been committed by a court because they're mentally unstable such that they're a danger to themselves or others. This actually kind of bridges the gap between those two things. But you're neither been involuntarily committed nor have you been convicted of a crime, but based on a police officer's belief that you're dangerous, they then have to submit that to a court who finds probable cause. They have to have a hearing, and a judge then determines, a judge often with no mental health care professionals involved at all, determines that you're quote unquote dangerous as defined by the statute. And in that case, Tony, you're a prohibited possessor, just like a felon or someone who's adjudicated to be mentally ill. You're a prohibited possessor forever unless a court down the road determines that you're no longer dangerous.
So now we get into how these laws are abused. Never mind that we could see where there would be a value conceptually to doing this. Yes, you are talking about for a temporary period of time, and that's how it's supposed to work, taking away someone's rights. I don't diminish that. That is serious stuff. And we should have a serious system for doing that. It should not be willy-nilly. What we have seen, though, and you have been studying this, you follow this, you talk about the cases that you have handled in the state of Indiana where you practice law, that more and more states are trying to invoke these kinds of laws, not as a way of caring for people who might need the help and protecting themselves and protecting others around them, but as an end around of the Second Amendment. What are these states and what is it that you're seeing?
Well, it's on so many different levels because, for instance, I've seen the law abused by vindictive ex-spouses or ex, you know, relationships. I've seen jealous coworkers. I had a neighbor dispute where two neighbors hated each other because they were in a constant argument over where they left the trash cans. And my client was a big time competitive shooter, and the neighbor would see him coming and going with guns all the time. So after one argument over trash cans, the guy called police and said, "Oh, this guy's crazy. He pointed a gun at me, threatened to kill me. He's unstable. He needed to come take his guns." And they did. And this guy had to hire a lawyer, go through a whole proceeding, and thank God for Ring doorbell videos, because we could prove that the whole thing never happened. It was completely fabricated. So you've got people, well, you know, and sometimes they're abused unintentionally. I just had one recently that I won. To show you how often they're without merit, I've won every single one I've ever had, other than one actual suicide attempt where we stipulated, say, yeah, this lady needs some help, and we'll come back when she's had treatment. But other than that, I've always gotten people's guns back because of how often these things are filed when there's no merit to them. But I just recently had one where girlfriend is having a fight with boyfriend. Boyfriend says some casual things like, I just don't really want to live without you because they're breaking up. She mentions that to a girlfriend living in another state. The girlfriend in the other state calls 911 or calls police in Indiana and says, this guy's suicidal. You need to go take his guns. And then the guy is pulled over and in a high-risk traffic stop is drug out of his car at gunpoint. How ironic is that? And they start red flag proceedings. I mean, that's the kind of BS that happens. Again, we went in, proved he's not dangerous, and he got his guns back, but had to hire a lawyer, and the whole thing was just an abuse of the system.
So you've brought that up twice now, talking to Guy Relford, relfordlaw.com, Second Amendment attorney, firearms, and Second Amendment expert. That is part of the abuse. that these things get invoked, and now if you can't afford a lawyer, you lose your rights. If you can't afford the right lawyer, you lose your rights. It very much plays like the idea of slap suits, strategic lawsuit against public participation. It's the idea of suing somebody for the sake of suing them, so they have to deal with that nonsense, so they never get to the issue that you're trying to keep them from. Has there ever been a conversation about these red flag laws being utilized in such a way as to prevent people from being able to exercise their rights because they simply can't afford to?
No, absolutely. And to your point, Tony, and this is such an important thing that people don't realize about red flag laws, so I'm glad you raise it, is it's considered a civil proceeding. It's not a criminal case. It's a civil forfeiture or seizure proceeding. And because it's civil in nature and not criminal, meaning you don't go to jail, you just lose your Second Amendment rights, you have no right to an attorney if you cannot afford one, like the Constitution guarantees you in a criminal case. So exactly to your point, you're just SOL if you can't afford a lawyer. And the hearings, by the terms of the statute, the hearings are supposed to happen quickly, within 14 days of the seizure, unless the respondent, the person whose guns were seized, asked for more time. So a lot of times people have their guns seized, they get a notice they're supposed to be in court in a couple of weeks. They think, okay, well, you know, this is like a preliminary hearing. This is like in a criminal case, an initial hearing, or in arraignment, as people think of them. And they show up and say, well, you know, I want to fight this. Well, that's the hearing. And if you're not prepared to prove that you're not dangerous or disprove the government's case, you lose. And the order goes on the books and you're a prohibited person.
So now let's take a look at the DOJ, the Department of Justice, launching this national center to help states implement red flag laws. We have seen Merrick Garland. We understand President Biden. There's nothing about the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center that is about actually providing help to people. In your view, is this just an end around to grab guns?
Yes, I think that's exactly the way the Biden administration intends it. Because we've seen over and over again what they can't get done in Congress, they want to use the courtroom to do. And that's why these anti-gun groups are suing the whole gun industry. But the Biden administration, they're issuing executive orders. And this is actually an outgrowth of the so-called Safer Communities Act of a year or so ago that unfortunately part of our own Indiana delegation voted for, where they provided funding for this. But I look at what resources, quote unquote, this national center is going to provide. And it's really a, hey, look, you too can have the gun rights of your neighbor eliminated. Look here. Here's exactly how you can do it. And that's the resources it provides. It's kind of a how-to for people who want to eliminate rights. Now, at the same time, I mean, is there the outlier out there? Is there the potential for some legitimate use? Well, yeah. I mean, I've had people call me and say, my son's a schizophrenic. He won't take his medicine. He's got guns. I really think he's going to kill himself or kill someone else. I don't know what to do. And the bottom line is, yes, there is the opportunity to initiate, just through a call to the police, a red flag proceeding if you really believe you're going to save someone's life. But man, balancing that legitimate use against the abuses is the tough part. But here's where it all comes down on that balance, which is due process. It's all about due process. That's what I keep pushing the legislature for. We greatly improved our statute in Indiana in 2019, and I work with legislators to get that done. I wrote a big part of it. So there's much more due process in it now than there used to be, but that's the focus, which is let people have an opportunity to get their rights back and put a high burden on the government to prove who's really truly dangerous and needs to be separated from their guns.
We often see that the Supreme Court doesn't take every gun case that comes its way, and it's frustrating that they don't. The argument on the other side is sometimes they have to be very picky because they could pick the wrong case, and you might be setting a precedent that isn't complete and isn't full, maybe not everything you want. So the pickiness involves getting the case that will best enable them to provide clarity to the Second Amendment. Do these red flag laws, have they ever been challenged in the Supreme Court? And what has the court said?
Well, not in the Supreme Court, but I'll tell you something that's very, very close that I think bears directly on the constitutionality of red flag laws is this Rahimi case that we just saw come out of Texas, the Fifth Circuit. And that was argued in the Supreme Court. And this goes also, Tony, to a very excellent point you just made of sometimes the wrong case goes up to the Supreme Court. And that's exactly how I feel about Rahimi. Rahimi didn't get red flag, quote unquote, but he was under a domestic violence order of protection, what a lot of people call a restraining order. And that also makes you a prohibited possessor, just like being red flagged if the court finds you're dangerous. And he challenged the constitutionality of that to say, hey, I was never convicted of a crime. I just in a civil proceeding where a judge determined that there should be this domestic violence order of protection issued against me, where I also had no right to counsel, et cetera, because it's civil in nature. I got this domestic violence order of protection entered against me, and now I've lost my constitutional rights. That violates the Second Amendment. That went up. The reason it's the wrong case is Rahimi's a bad guy. I mean, he been arrested a bunch of times, although not convicted of anything that made him lose his rights, was abusive toward multiple women, according to their testimony, had fired shots at someone who's trying to intervene when he was abusing a woman. So he's not a good guy. The Supreme Court's not going to be sympathetic. And I think they're going to say, well, it's constitutional to separate people from their guns who are truly dangerous, even in a civil proceeding. I'm afraid they're going to say that and ignore the due process issues where you don't have a right to counsel, where you can't compel witnesses in your favor. All those protections you have in a criminal proceeding, you don't necessarily have in a civil one, whether it's domestic violence order of protection or red flag. But the Rahimi case, one way or the other, is going to shed light on what the Supreme Court's likely to do if it takes a red flag case.
Guy Relford, you can find more about him at Relford Law, R-E-L-F-O-R-D, RelfordLaw.com. If I could only say it, I'd be such a professional. Guy Relford, always a pleasure. I've got more to get to. I'm Tony Katz.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Folks, you notice leading comics aren't making much fun of Bidenomics anymore. They're thinking maybe it works to build from the middle out and the bottom up.
Did they forget how to make fun of Bidenomics? Because, I mean, if we need to write them some jokes, I mean, I'm happy to do it. Here's one. Why did the mom take the third job? So she could afford the eggs. No, it's not a good joke. What did one guy say to the other guy at the gas pump? These prices suck. I think that's good stuff. That is gold, Jerry. What are you talking about? What? Here, all right, one more. I mean, if the economists have forgotten how to make fun of Bidenomics, here's one more. What did the customer say to the waiter at the restaurant? See you next year. There, that's gold. That's good, because you can only afford to go once a year. Tony Katz today. Look, this is a maddening proposition from Joe Biden. Maddening proposition. Inflation is up 2 months in a row. And he's like, hey, see, my plan worked perfectly. I don't know why he talks like that. 23 skidoo. It just is. It is so radical that the administration speaks with such joy when they lie, when they perpetrate this fraud against the American people again and again and again. The economists aren't making fun of Bidenomics. They've dismissed it as a failure. They have said this does not work. The American people don't feel it in any way good at all. They're paying more for everything. Their dollar is worth less, heading towards worthless. This is serious. Joe Biden, once again, disconnected from reality, not knowing where people are. The administration this is how they act. It's kind of stunning, except when you got the press on your side, you can get away with almost anything. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today. I'm a big believer in the concept of clarity. Now, I'm not the first person to say this. The first radio host I ever heard really engage this idea was Dennis Prager. The idea that he's not looking for agreement, he's looking for clarity. Do we at least have a basic understanding of what we're all talking about? Are we all coming from the same page in the hymnal, if you will? Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Good to be with you. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. I feel this way about Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I know, you do too. This is a childlike woman with childlike policies who comes across like a child. But her commentaries on Israel specifically supporting Gaza require a response that has to be forceful. And I want to make sure we're on the same page about this. Now, to get there, I gotta take us on a little bit of a journey. I spoke with Congresswoman Victoria Spartz of the Indiana 5th District. Full disclosure, she's my member of Congress. It's a very convoluted primary race here because she said she wasn't going to run. And you've seen Victoria Spartz, and she's from Ukraine originally and speaking out about support for Ukraine, speaking out against the Biden administration. And then she made some statements about Ukraine. You're like, wait, does she want to fund? Does she not want to fund? What's happening here? What's going on? And then when it came to the election for Speaker McCarthy, she was getting into fights with McCarthy, and she wasn't going to vote for him. And then she did vote for him. And then she didn't vote to remove him, but she voted to allow the vote to remove him to happen. Man, it's crazy town with Congresswoman Victoria Spartz, but she wasn't going to run. And then she announced she's going to run. And so the race here has gotten kind of ugly because the people who were going to run, they're still in the race. They're like, how dare she? So now they weren't expecting to do any kind of mudslinging. Now they're slinging some mud. Is what it is that they're doing. But I wanted to get her thoughts because, you know, I'm looking for a lot of people to be on the record about the United States abstaining from the UN resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza during the month of Ramadan, right? This holiday for Muslims. And the idea of a ceasefire only gives aid and comfort to Hamas. That's all it does. And the idea that, well, it's a non-binding resolution, none of that matters. This is about the abdication of leadership from the United States. There are huge implications here. The United States abstained from this vote. Massive implications about leadership and the lack of leadership from the Biden administration, from the political left, which will tie us in to Representative Ocasio-Cortez in just a moment. But I first asked Representative Victoria Spartz what her take was on the U.S. abstaining on this vote from the U.N. Security Council regarding demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
Well, listen, Tony, it's very, truly, truly embarrassing. It's embarrassing for us. It's unbelievable, but it's also, think about it. Israel, our strongest ally and friend in the Middle East, what it showed the rest of the world that we're abandoning our ally. This has a significant national security implications on us as a country. And really doing it that in a very challenging time for Israel, like right now, it's just really despicable. And this administration is a total mess that they've done it. We abandoned allies in Afghanistan. You know, we've seen what was happening around the world. And it's really, it causes us serious national security threats and implications.
The overarching conversation, or one of the overarching conversations regarding Israel, is, of course, this funding that's tied to Ukraine funding, that's tied to Taiwan funding, that's right now not existent in the House. Speaker Johnson won't bring that to the floor, even though it passed the Senate. Should the House be voting on this funding, or, as he has looked at it, border funding and significant border funding needs to come first?
Well, listen, a border is extremely important, and I was very, very disappointed that it's in this, you know, package we just passed, and I did not support it. I mean, there are a lot of other concerns with this, you know, appropriations omnibus that we passed, but that was one of the bigger reasons I did not vote for it, because I felt we had Department of Homeland Security appropriation, and we should have had border security. This is number one, you know, our national security issue. But I also think, you know, we passed, you know, we can talk about it, and there are a lot of variety of different concerns with Ukraine, another thing, lack of strategy and oversight. But with Israel, we passed actually several times aid to Israel. We have to do it, and Schumer and Biden have been blocking it. Okay, and I think we need to come back and really put pressure, because we don't need to put this omnibuses, all of these packages together. We could have passed border security, they fail us. We passed Israel aid, they failed us. And they do nothing about, you know, helping. And honestly, they start appeasing a lot of adversaries around the world. And now we have pretty much Iran, you know, getting pretty much to the point when they can have nuclear weapons. We're worried about Russia, you know, waving their nuclear flag. Can you imagine Iran having nuclear weapons? This is a very dangerous situation. Or giving $1 billion from Ukrainian aid to, you know, to Yemen, to Houthis in Yemen that are attacking our ships right now. This is just insane and stupid.
Well, she's not wrong when it comes to the Houthi rebels. It's Congresswoman Victoria Spartz from the 5th District of Indiana. This vote, this abstaining by the U.S. was horrific. And it says a tremendous amount about us. So let's start with the first bit of, let's make sure we're on the same page here. This isn't actually about whether you agree with Israeli policy. This is about whether you agree that terrorists have to go. Do we agree with the baseline that terrorists have to go? Terrorists who start the fight, terrorists who pick the battle, terrorists who pick the battlefield. Are you capable of keeping multiple thoughts in your head? Or is it like them, these progressives, these ones who do ridiculous sit-ins at Vanderbilt University and colleges all across the country? Look at all the innocents you're killing without a recognition of the innocents that were killed. Remember, the people who refuse to engage the understanding and the recognition of the start of this, it was Gad Saad, who works a lot in these fields, who calls it, who refers to it as AOC, and he doesn't mean Ocasio-Cortez. He refers to it as amnesia of causality. They don't pay attention to what Hamas did. Only Israel is awful. And I want to be sure that we're on the same page, that Israel is nothing more than a placeholder for them. Israel today, the United States tomorrow. Look at the awful. Look at the terrible. There's for the people who want to burn it all down. And since everything in their lens is oppressed and oppressor, Israel's the oppressor. The United States is the oppressor. They will always be the bad guy. The fact that these people are warped and twisted and have no understanding of history and no understanding of reality is secondary. You have to understand where they're at. And you have to understand that fighting them, it shouldn't be enough that we have to fight the terrorists. We now have to fight these people. Well, that is part of the job. And therefore, the abstaining by the United States on this resolution is showing that they are gaining traction. And there's data polling to show that 55% of Americans disagree with how Israel's handling the war. Well, every day they're told, look at the babies dying, but they don't talk about the babies that were killed by Hamas. They make the American press, because of American progressives, have got Americans believing that Israel attacked these poor people. They're not poor people. Poll after poll after poll, not just one, an amalgam of polling, shows that they support Hamas, shows that they support what happened on October 7th, shows that they would elect Hamas again. They haven't learned. They like it. Now, is that true of everybody? Of course not. Are people dying? Absolutely. It's Hamas's fault. If Hamas released the hostages, this would stop. And for the record, I don't think it should. just so we're on the same page. Hamas has to be destroyed to every last man, to every last family member, to their dry cleaners. Destroyed. It's the only way you're going to have peace. It's the only way. You got to get rid of the people who want to destroy you. Never forget, the Palestinians could have had a homeland. The quote-unquote Palestinians could have had a homeland. It was rejected in 1948. Then they went to war and attacked Israel for existing. They didn't want those Jews to have a place to live. That's on them. They've been battling this battle for 70-plus years. They've always been wrong. If they would just live in peace, everything would be cool. But they don't want that. And American leftists don't want that because they're in the destruction business. They're not in the growth business. Now, to prove that, as I said, let me bring you to Representative Ocasio-Cortez, who is a child. Her childlike policies, childlike philosophy, childlike presentation. But she is also dangerous because she's a member of Congress. When asked by Jake Tapper about, you know, Israelis are officials are saying, and by the way, there is no ceasefire right now. They were trying to come to some agreement and meetings in Doha, Qatar, but Hamas is intransigent, and Israel's like, hey, we're willing to give up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinian prisoners for the 100 people that you still are keeping captive. And Hamas is like, nope. And they're like, well, what else can we do? What else can we do? We'll just keep fighting. So Jake Tapper on CNN asks, you know, Israeli officials say this could end tomorrow if Hamas freed the hostages. Do you disagree? Listen.
They also, Israeli officials also argue this war could end tomorrow if Hamas freed the hostages and laid down the arms. Do you disagree?
I do disagree because when we are talking about famine, the actions of Hamas should not be tied to whether a three-year-old can eat. The actions of Hamas do not justify forcing thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to eat grass as their bodies consume themselves.
First, I pay no attention to the examples that Representative Ocasio-Cortez gives because I have no proof of them. If you're utilizing numbers that come from the Gaza Health Ministry, which is to say numbers that come from Hamas, on the wounded and on the killed, these numbers are a fraud. We've been able to explain this with data. We've been able to explain this with basic statistics. We've been able to show this with satellite imagery. You don't see an increase in hospitals. You don't see an increase in cemeteries like that. So their number of 30,000 plus, whatever it is they claim it is now, I don't buy into that. And a majority of women and children don't buy into that at all. And I don't buy into this. I will tell you that people are clearly dying. I will tell you that there's no doubt that women and children have been killed in this. There's no doubt. There's no conversation of how many of those people were killed by Hamas. These people were not leading a great life before, although they have an opportunity to. They got a lot of good beachfront property. There's an opportunity to live great. But you live under terrorist rule and you like it? That is not the fault of Israel. So that's something to be on the same page on, but here it is. She disagrees. She disagrees that this could end tomorrow if Hamas freed the hostages and laid down their arms. You see, these other things prove that, you know, Hamas isn't the issue, Israel is. That's what Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is saying. Representative Ocasio-Cortez is giving aid and comfort to a terrorist organization. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is on the side of a terrorist organization. Like Representative Rashida Tlaib, like Representative Ilhan Omar, like Representative Cori Bush, like Representative Ayanna Pressley, and yes, like Representative Jamal Bowman. Representative Jamal Bowman, who stated that what we have seen coming out of Israel, what they have stated is nothing more than propaganda. Oh, Israeli women being raped, that was just propaganda. That never happened. That never happened. What a lowlife son of a you-know-what he is. Representative Andre Carson of Indianapolis supporting them as well. So I believe we have to start somewhere. We have to start at a baseline so we understand each other. And I am now doing this with all the members of my delegation, the Indiana delegation, right where I live. And I believe this of Oklahoma. I believe this of every state in the country. I believe this of Republicans. Representative Ocasio-Cortez needs to be stripped of her positions, of her committee assignments, and needs to be expelled. There is no possible way to look at what she said other than giving aid and comfort to a terrorist organization supported by Iran. Get rid of her committee assignments. Strip them from her. No more committees. I believe you should move to expulsion. Now, today. And the idea that you want to say that there could be somebody on the political right that says, well, Tony, this is just free speech. This is not just free speech. This is aid and comfort to a terrorist organization. And so we're on the same page. There is no other page. We're not discussing whether you agree or disagree with Israeli politics or policy. Feel free. Knock yourself out. I do. Hamas shouldn't surrender and give back the hostages because Israel bad guy? Aid and comfort to Hamas. Remove her from every committee. I want to make sure we were on the same page. There is no room for Representative Ocasio-Cortez in Congress. There's no room for that level of despicableness. Take her off the committees, then expel her today. I'm asking every member of the Indiana delegation to do that. You should do the same where you are. I'm Tony Katz. The updates out of Baltimore, good. Six people presumed dead. Construction workers who were not found. They called off the search and rescue because of weather issues and something that was brought up that we may not be considering. Tony Katz today, this bridge falls into the Patapsco River, right? Hit by this ship, this cargo ship, the Dali. Well, there are pieces of metal twisted and turned in every which way. This is hard stuff to swim around for these divers. It's a terrible, terrible story. Never mind economic impact, which will be the story going forward. And certainly investigation and how this happened. But at least six people are dead. It's a horrible story. Think of them today. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. Tomorrow, everyone. Take care.